This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
Daniel Gafford left last night's victory over Washington. He's expected to miss at least a couple of weeks with a dislocated thumb. With Wendell Carter Jr. already injured, where do the Bulls turn for rim protection?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to have a lot of rim protection. Let me ask you a question, and I know this is going to sound like a wise guy question, but is Cristiano Felicio still on the roster?
Yes.
Is he still on this team?
Yes.
And again, the why would follow, but does that mean that he has to play now?
Bingo.
Okay. Just
was,
making sure.
He was praised by Jim Boylan last night.
I know. Yeah. I know. So. Thaddeus Young is a small forward. Luke Kornet is a power forward. He's tall. He's very skinny. I think it's Cristiano Felicio would be the closest thing to rim protection that you're going to get at this point, and you just got to get a healing machine of some sort. Go find yourself some witch doctor or priestess, whatever it takes.
It's really a shame because Gafford was playing very well, and he's had a pretty promising first half of the rookie season, and he's a guy that was going to get an extended opportunity without Wendell Carter in there. So now you scramble. Now you're even weaker defensively than, you know, you were a team statistically very good defensively, but you were being so aggressive that you were creating open looks and open penetration lanes. Now it's even more difficult because when those guards penetrate, there's nobody there to get in the way. Now, you could say Felicio, who Jim Boylan tried to praise post-game as being a guy you trust, but that's just, you just don't really trust that.
And that's why he's played 9 minutes all season long. He trusts him
exactly
that much.
And Luke Kornet, I mean, that's not a rim protector.
No,
that's an invitation to dunk.
Yeah.
So I don't know what you do. Maybe Thad Young, Laurie Markkanen could play some center, but that's not going
to
be
invitation
somebody.
Invitation to dunk.
There's no impediment there. This is bad for the Bulls.
That's kind of the theme of the season, isn't it? This is bad for the Bulls. As much as Dustin wants to denigrate young Wendell Carter often this season and last season, not only...
Oh, pass the Kleenex. Metrics and Wendell Carter Jr.
Not only was he averaging a double-double, his presence inside and defensively for what he did, he was their only viable option as an interior defender, as a rim protector. So the importance of losing Carter, and I don't want to put the injury-prone label on Wendell, but he missed a large portion of his rookie season.
And softest now, church music.
He's out now with another injury.
That's fair, Kevin. No, I think you're right.
I don't want to do it.
I know. I like him too, but I think you're right.
It's fair to wonder about the durability of him, you know, and that he's missed an extensive time the last couple of seasons. Maybe you go small with the lineup. Maybe you do try Lowry at the five, although, I mean, he's certainly no... great shakes defensively. Rim protector, you guys mentioned Kornet. He is certainly not on the team for his defense.
He's very tall.
Or his width.
Is he 7'2"?
His width. I believe he's 7'1", 7'2". No, he's listed at 7'2", yeah.
Well, listed at. But I'm saying he's legitimately taller than you think.
He's lanky. He's very lanky.
It's weird. The Bulls centers are all like 6'9", 6'10". And their power forwards are all over 7 feet.
It's bizarre. The construction of this roster. Felicio, he's going to finally get some tick here, it looks like. There are not many other options. He is a large man.
Get some what?
Tick.
Get some tick.
Get some tick.
I just wanted to make sure I got that right.
Tick, 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 tick.
Did you ever watch 60 Minutes?
Funny story about Felicio. One of my buddies is a soccer coach with the youth system of the Fire. And he plays a little pickup over at the pitch sometime. And he says Felicio is over there playing pickup soccer all the time.
Brazilian.
Yes, and he says he's slow.
Is he a wizard?
Says he's slow, but his legs are so long that the strides, it takes him about four strides to get the entire length of the pitch. So maybe a career for Felicio if this whole basketball thing doesn't work.
He's got to find a way to stay in shape because he's not getting a lot of tick.
He's got a lot of money, though. That's well, that's another great contract, huh?
So that's pitch and tick.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thanks to the inside reporting from Kevin Zipak, we know that at least Cristiano Felicio has been keeping up with his cardio and is playing soccer. So there's that. He's going to get some PT here because, look, he's going to get some tick because there is no other answer here, unfortunately. I mean, who are your other big guys that are left? It's Felicio. Cornette's a joke to talk about rim protection with. And Markkanen? No, these are not realistic answers. And unfortunately, Felicio really isn't either, but it's by default. So yeah, it's Felicio because you don't have anybody else. I don't know, maybe you can find someone to acquire that would be
They've got 15 better. Guaranteed contracts right now, so that's not likely.
Nope, exactly. So Felicio.
The worst part of this news is, of course, now Wendell, the value of Wendell Carter Jr. is going to go off the charts. I mean, he gets a double-double. Are you kidding? If you're 6'10", 6'11", and you can't get a double-double every night in the NBA, okay, then go
He's
home.
He's 6'9".
Okay, excuse me. If you're 6'9", and Ooh. You can't get a double-double, give me a break.
Curry was tall. He couldn't really rebound.
It's all about effort, Kevin, is the point. It's all about effort and want rebounding. Is only about effort and want to. It's not about height, okay? Same thing with rim protecting, okay? Protecting the rim is want to, okay? A 7'1" guy, Lauri Markkanen, Euro trash, soft as a grape, okay, should be able to protect the rim, but unfortunately can't because he was taught that his whole game should be from 18, whatever, 21 feet, whatever it is, the NBA three-point line. Okay, that's what he does. Okay, he's got nice curly hair, and he shoots three-pointers, and he's 7'1". Congratulations.
I think you're going to look back and regret your take on Wendell Carter Jr.
No shot.
This guy's never regretted any of his takes in his life.
Listen.
Yeah. He just looks for any kind of confirmation.
Hashtag anybody but Floyd. I said that when it was first rumored, the first mock draft we ever saw, that Floyd was going to the Bears.
And,
hashtag
And what did Ryan Pace say
Floyd.
About him? What did Ryan Pace say about him?
He's got the rear end of a track athlete.
He said that he does a lot of different things and in coverage and that he had no problem paying him the money.
Protection.
I like that you have to throw it back to 2016 for the last time you were right about something.
Oh, no. That was the ultimate thing I was right about, and I'm going to be right about Wendell Carter Jr. Just stay tuned in for another 5 years, and you'll see that it comes true.
You know, Dave, it's a good question.
Now that Jimbo Covert has gotten the deserving Hall of Fame call he waited so long to get, who is the most underappreciated member of the 85 Bears? Who is the next Bears player in the Hall of Fame, and how long will it take?
The irony is, I think that we have spent the last 30-some years appreciating every single member of that team. That I'm not sure that anybody's been underappreciated, but people who maybe not have gotten as much due as others. I mean, Jimbo Covert was at the top of the list because he deserved to go into the Hall with the call that he got yesterday. That was very a long time coming and good for him, and it was great to hear him be as excited as he was. Maybe Wilbur Marshall, maybe Matt Sui, guys who probably aren't the first names that come to mind when you talk about the great defense or the great offense. So maybe those two guys come to mind first. As far as the next Hall of Famer, that's an interesting question because a lot of people will, you know, talk about Lance Briggs. They'll mention Charles Tillman. I would say that the next one in line would be Devin Hester to me, and it'll happen within the next 3 to 5 years. Then I would go Olin Krutz as being the most deserving. And then I might go Tillman and then Briggs. But I think the next Bear into the Hall of Fame would be Devin Hester.
That's a very interesting subject, and I'll get to that in a second. I do believe that there was a lot of appreciation for the 85 Bears, and I don't think there are very many underappreciated guys. Maybe Hilgi, because you didn't mention him even when you were talking about your Hall of Fame guys.
No, I feel bad.
Yeah, you should, because he was a very hardworking and really good player for a very long time. And I don't know that there are a lot of undeserving players. You know, Wilbur Marshall is a good answer because Wilbur is kind of Hall of Fame material. And if he hadn't left the Bears, I think he would have been there. But his role changed when he got to Washington. He played very well there, but it was a different defense, and he was asked to do different things and maybe not as appreciated there as he should have been. As far as the next Bears player in the Hall of Fame, I find this fascinating, and I can't wait to talk to Dan Pompey about it. If Julius Peppers goes into the Hall of Fame, is he a Bear?
No.
So they will designate that he's not a Bear?
I think that they'll probably mention it, but he'll go in as a Carolina Panther without
right.
question. Yeah.
Okay. So Reuben Brown goes in as a Bill.
Definitely.
If he goes in.
Yep.
Okay. So we're looking at guys that were on the roster, just not to hurt anyone's feelings, but Lance Briggs isn't a Hall of Famer, and neither Tillman is never making it to the Hall of Fame. He's a great Bear, but look at how many Pro Bowls he make. Two. Like that's they look at stuff like that. I don't, you know, the peanut punch. I get it.
That's why he gets a lot of conversation. But I tend to agree with
you.
Yeah.
I will be very curious to see how they handle Devin Hester, because Devin Hester, you had to change rules because of Devin Hester, and he's the best return guy in the history of the game. But you don't really honor those guys. It's 12% of the plays. And now it's even less than that.
That's true. But did it change your mind or thinking at all when he was included in the top 100 list of all-time players in the league?
Listen, I love the kid, and I think it'd be great to get him in. I'm just saying.
Yeah, maybe not your thinking, but just overall the perception.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm saying that this is something that they don't do, right? I mean, if they're going to do that, no offense to anyone, but Patrick Manley might have been the greatest long snapper that we've ever seen in Chicago, maybe in the league, but he's never getting into the Hall of Fame. They just don't do it.
A great brewmaster as well. Have you guys tried the long
tried
snapper
that, no.
beer?
No, I don't. You know what?
It's good.
You buy
I'm
it?
More of a lager lout if I'm going to have a beer.
More of a lager than an ale guy.
I wouldn't have an ale of any kind.
Okay.
So.
See, I'm the opposite. I'm an ale man.
Yeah. Yeah, you're ailing.
I feel strongly question. Both ways.
Yeah, but I don't drink beer anymore.
Very pragmatic of you, Dave.
The fact, though, is that I'll be very curious. I can't wait to talk to Dan about this question.
Well, calling any of the 85 Bears underappreciated in this town is ridiculous. I think all of them are appreciated enough. I think that so many people, I wasn't alive for that Super Bowl. I have to reiterate that time and time again. But I think that everybody that was and everybody that enjoyed it and all of these massive Bear fans, and Dustin's got his finger on the trigger over here. He's getting ready to jump all over me for being born too late, apparently. But looking at the depth chart here, Mike Richardson is a name I don't hear very often.
You obviously didn't watch that team if you're L.A.
Yeah,
Mike Richardson
LA
is
Mike.
Your answer.
He's the only guy that I haven't heard praised ad nauseum.
Answer.
You know, you look at the offensive line, they're all well-regarded players, tons of Pro Bowls, the Hall of Famers on the line. Willie Gault, I've heard a bunch about him. Obviously, with the QB and Walter Payton, Dent, you know, the defensive line. All of these guys are praised. To the land's end. So I don't know if there's such thing as an underappreciated 85 Bear. As far as Devin Hester, he should be the next Bears Hall of Famer. 2022, I think, is when he is eligible for that. And Mully said it. I mean, they had to change rules because of Devin Hester. If there are place kickers and punters in the Hall of Fame, which there are, there should be kick returners, and he should be in, no question about it.
Well, I'll agree that there is... that the 85 Bears are not underappreciated whatsoever in this town and never will be. I mean, they are legends and have been held up since their championship in 1985, and it's been a very long time since then. So, yeah, I'm not going to say any of them are underappreciated. I love the Devin Hester answer. I'm going to go with my guy, Jay Hilgenberg. I was alive for the 85 Super Bowl, but I was just a baby, didn't watch it. But, I mean, the criteria is all there. You guys brought up, Mully, you brought up Pro Bowls. 7 consecutive Pro Bowls for my guy, Hilgi. You know, a key member of that 85 championship team. Just a great center. I think I would love to see him get in.
So, Ray, when you say you cried when the Bears won the Super Bowl, you were actually probably in a crib, right?
Yes, my mother could probably vouch for that. I probably was crying during the game, interrupting the game.
As long as you weren't conceived during it and tell everyone about it, because that's way too much.
And I'll say this about I was not. I was already born. But Hilgi also is just in tremendous shape to this day, it looks like he could still snap somebody in half.
That is true, and Olin could also snap somebody in half.
Hopefully you.
Probably me. I'd only wish Doug Buffon had done that to somebody you guys will talk to at about 9:05. Anyway.
Nearly.
When you rewrite the rules for somebody, I think that they're definitely worth having a conversation about. I will agree with you, though, Molly. Like, he's involved in very few plays in the game, but he did... If you take him off the last team that went to the Super Bowl representing the Bears, they don't go to the Super Bowl. He was that big of a... He changed field position. People kicked away. They provided a Bears offense that wasn't very dynamic, right? They could run the ball pretty good, but they weren't exactly putting the ball up in the air and throwing it downfield with Sexy Rexy. Right?
Was that the fastest touchdown in the Super Bowl? It might have been beaten since then, but that was at the time the fastest.
I believe so.
Ever scored in the Super Bowl.
I mean, I think Kilgey should be there. I do think Olin should be there. I think Hester should be there. As far as underappreciated, you and I had a really nice conversation pre-show, and I heard Covert talk about this. Steve McMichael, okay, talked about it on this program yesterday and other places he talked yesterday. Steve McMichael, and Kevin's right about it's hard to say that 85 Bears are underappreciated, but at least from that defense, I think he was better than people realize. I mean, Hampton was fantastic in the past.
He's
and you can make
thing.
The argument that maybe Hampton makes McMichael look a little bit better than he really was. But I mean, if you're a Chicagoan and you like that sort of stuff, like McMichael checked all the boxes. Like he's a man's man.
Also went on to have a
wrestling
nice
career.
Pro
wrestling. I mean I thought you'd be. I'm glad you knew that. I'm shocked that you.
Yeah,
knew
man.
That.
Member of the Four Horsemen, former WCW United States
See,
champion.
If
he had gone to Japan, Kevin would be promulgated.
He'd still have a poster above his bed.
He wouldn't have been able to cut it in New Japan Pro Wrestling. I'll tell you that right now.
I mean, that's a pretty general question.
How does hiring John DeFilippo as quarterback coach and promoting Dave Ragone to passing game coordinator make the Bears offense better? Is it fair to connect any of the new hires to possible quarterback alternatives?
Yeah, I think that it does make them, it does help them adding these guys. You know, again, I think we have to talk about what they do on offense. And the fact that Matt Nagy comes from the Andy Reid school of football. Andy Reid obviously worked for Mike Holmgren, and a lot of the principles of the West Coast offense are a part of what he does. But what he does is he collects plays, and that's what Matt Nagy grew up learning how to do. You have a whiteboard. You have everybody contribute whatever play they've seen. Supposedly Dave Ragone is a guy who some of his plays have worked. So that's nice to know. And you can get as many plays as you can get from whatever source you have to get them. That is great. Matt Nagy sits down and looks at tape over guys for the draft, and he has two legal pads in front of him, one in which he's writing traits of the player, the other in which he's writing plays that he sees in the college game that he wants to somehow work into his game plan over the course of the year. So you're bringing in more guys with different ideas and different plays for your playbook. Don't forget Brad Childress is gone, and then you had the guys you fired, and you need more plays, and that is a good idea. I like, again, that these guys, there are guys behind Matt Nagy with experience as play callers, because play calling is an art, and you need to be able to kind of undulate with the game a little bit and go with the flow and catch a wave, if you will. And I think what we've seen from the Bears is this kind of lack of rhythm, this sort of, you know, abrupt play calling, not a flow to it. So maybe guys that have done it in the league before can offer their two cents and perhaps help gain some rhythm in what they're doing, and then maybe they don't just fizzle when they get into the red zone. Maybe they actually score a point or two.
Okay. I don't want to be the wet blanket here, but I'll wrap myself around this idea that...
It's usually my job on the program.
You know, I don't buy this. Here's all I care about if I'm a Chicago Bears fan, and I'm looking at what they're doing in the offseason with their staff. Who's calling the plays? Who's taking the snaps? That is the only thing that matters to me if I'm looking at the Bears offense in terms of, did it get better? Is it getting better? To me, this seems like a desperate attempt to salvage Mitch Trubisky's failing career. And I understand that, you know, you go to guys who have a reputation around the league, but John DeFilippo has worked for 6 teams in 7 years now. Okay, how good of a coach can he be? I with due respect, I think that's an open-ended question, and I do respect everything that he has done in the league and where he has come from. I remember him when he was a graduate assistant on the Notre Dame staff when I was in South Bend. I've seen his career progress, but 6 teams in 7 years, to me, that's a red flag. So then you go to the quarterback, and you have a guy who we know, because the head coach told us to be true, has difficulty processing information at the line of scrimmage and in the pocket. So now we're going to multiply the voices in his head. I understand that there's a need to add plays to your collection, but I wonder, in terms of these guys are enhancing their resumes, but are you improving the results? I'm not convinced. I will only be convinced when we see a difference in the person calling the plays showing improvement and the person taking the snaps being better. Until that happens, all this other stuff, window dressing.
You know, I've been hearing about Matt Nagy and his staff collecting plays now for the past couple of years. At what point do you collect too many plays? How many? Like, have you guys seen the TV show Hoarders? Like, I just imagine Matt Nagy at his home, just the place completely disheveled, just plays drawn up everywhere on the wall.
His garage has got binders upon binders.
Just completely just bogged down in plays, and he wants Mitch Trubisky to learn all of them all at once, and he's not capable of doing that, apparently. To connect any of the dots here with the new hires, I mean, a lot of people were doing the Laser Dalton connection a few days ago, and that seems like it's an option. I don't know if it's a good option or a bad one. It's not great. It's certainly not going to thrill anybody, but that's one connection that people have already gone on to make. As far as DeFilippo, he's bounced around a little bit, but it wasn't that long ago that he was one of the hot up-and-coming names. People were talking about him potentially as a head coaching candidate fairly recently, so I don't know if he's gotten progressively dumber or why the shine has kind of faded off him the past couple of years, but he has been around in a few different spots. Hopefully it ends up for him a little bit better here, because that would be better for the Bears and their offense. And of course, I'm just happy for my guy Rags getting the bump up in the organization. David, Rags to Riches.
There you go.
You saw it last night.
Yes.
Was saving it for 5:48 this morning. You love a bad pun, and there's a bad one right there.
Well, I'm in agreement that too many cooks in the kitchen in Mitchell Trubisky's head could be the case here and could be to his detriment. But, I mean, things were not working out for what we saw with Mitchell Trubisky. That's a multi-layer. There's many reasons for that. So maybe a guy from the outside like DeFilippo can come in and bring some clarity to Trubisky. That's about the best optimism I can show right now, because I'm congratulations to Rags, as Kevin points out. He got the promotion, but something needs to be changed with the play calling and all of that. I don't know if this will really make a difference. We'll have to see, but hopefully Filippo makes some kind of helps Trubisky clear some things up in his mind and gets his mental game a little stronger with what he's doing. And in terms of connecting new hires to possible QB alternatives, I think everything should be on the table. The Bears have to bring someone in to be a legitimate backup that could potentially take over if this Trubisky thing falls apart during the course of 2020.
I'm all for this. Back when they were looking for a new head coach, I think I had pushed all my chips in the middle on John DeFilippo. I really thought that would be a good hire. I thought that made a lot of sense. I felt like I knew more about him at the time than I knew about Matt Nagy, right, as far as what he was doing on the NFL level. And he would spend some time at Notre Dame, so that checked another box for me. It's interesting because supposedly the quarterback, Mitch, and Ragone have this great relationship. And is this going to potentially screw Mitch up? Like, if DeFilippo is now the voice, the primary voice that's in his ear on a day-in, day-out basis, does that mess him up or does that enhance him? That's the question. Like, does it help or does it hurt? And the bar is so low now with the guy, you'd think it could only help. But God forbid if it actually made him worse. That's the scary part. And the Bears have also overly emphasize that Mitch can't handle a whole lot at once. So you can collect and hoard all the plays you want, but obviously you can't implement them all. But I do want to give also, to Mully's point, even more credit to Nagy. I mean, this is not only a guy that could potentially call plays for you. This is a guy that if things don't go well this year overall, this is a guy who potentially could take your job that you've invited into the building. And I am a firm believer on not inviting people into the building that can take your job in any walk of life, in any occupation. Okay? You don't bring people in that can take your job. Rule number one of Fight Club.
That was a great question, and I appreciate it.
Do you see Chris Bryant's scheduled appearance at the Cubs convention as sort of goodbye to Chicago, or maybe a chance to build a groundswell of support among the fan base?
Well, I sure hope not, in terms of the goodbye part. I'm on record, and I still maintain that getting rid of Chris Bryant would be something that the Cubs regret, even though they could defend. There's going to be a market out there now that Josh Donaldson's in Minnesota. The Braves, maybe the Nationals, maybe the Dodgers get involved. You hear all sorts of rumors. The Braves probably have the most to offer. So Chris Bryant, I've been told and reassured yesterday that he is going to be coming to town and not fazed by anything that he's going to face. He's going to face everything head on. You would expect anything, nothing more or less than, from him, because he's always been a stand-up guy. I don't believe that any sort of the groundswell of support is going to have any impact at all on Theo Epstein or Jed Hoyer in terms of whether or not they deal him. Or this is going to be a economic decision. It's going to be a baseball decision, and it's not going to be one that the Cubs make emotionally. They're going to lead with their head, not their heart, and that'll be for everybody else in the fan base to kind of try to, you know, sway their opinion. But I don't think it will sway their opinion. If I had to guess right now, if I had to check a box and say, will Chris Bryant be on the Cubs opening day roster, yes or no, I would lean toward no, even though I think that would be something that would take away from opening day and maybe next season. The Cubs would probably get preparing themselves, and maybe the fan base this weekend, for taking a half step backward.
I sadly believe this is sort of a goodbye. I think it's a real class move on his part. I just think that I think the grievance is going to be resolved relatively soon. I would guess maybe in the next week, within the next week, maybe, I don't know, maybe before the end of the week, maybe tomorrow, maybe Monday, maybe Tuesday. I hope it's resolved very soon. And then, as you say, David, the trade, we know that the trade market is there, and it's difficult to really sit here and tell you that that they're not going to go ahead and pull the trigger, because it seems like they're itching to make some kind of move, and it seems like they don't want to pay him $350 million or whatever it's going to cost in 2 years to retain his services. So I think they will. I think they'll start. They won't say this. They certainly won't say it at the convention. But I think, you know, trading him is obviously a step back, and I think they're going to take a step back. I think they're going to try to reload and try to get this team up and running in a year or two, not necessarily for 2020. And that's what it looks like right now. And if they were to try to get ready for the right now, then they'd have to trade more. They'd have to trade more prospects, and they'd go through a difficult time with that. So I really believe this is goodbye. I would like a groundswell. I don't think it's a brave thing for him to do. I think it's an easy thing for him to do. Don't Cub fans love Chris Bryant? Is anybody mad at him because he won't sign a contract extension? And because of the grievance that he filed, I don't think anybody holds anything against him. And I think he's a great young dude. And, you know, I think fans are going to treat him with nothing but love.
Well, he is a good guy, and he's a fantastic player. But, Mully, Cub fans as a collective, and not all of them, but there has been a lot of anti-Bryant sentiment over the past couple of years. Some of it.
You think
he's
getting booed at the convention?
No, I don't think he's. I think the only people at the convention are, you know, the truest
diehard
Cubby bluest. So I don't think at that, in that scenario, he wouldn't be getting booed. But there are a lot of, frankly, dumb idiot baseball fans and Cub fans that don't appreciate Chris Bryant, that think that he's not any good anymore, he's not going to be worth a big contract, trade him now, this and that. You know, Javi came in and took all the shine, and he's a superstar on the team now. And I think it's crazy. Chris Bryant is still an excellent baseball player, and if there needs to be a groundswell of support back around him, I think it's embarrassing for Cubs fans that any of them, because there have been a lot that have turned their back on him, and it's just wild to me.
Well, out of pure hope, I'm going to say that this is going to be to build a groundswell of support. This is just Chris Bryant being a pro, fulfilling the obligation, going to hang out with the fans, mingle with the fans as he would if this was not a year with all of this contractual business taking place. But it very well could be a goodbye. I just hope that does not happen. That would be a mistake in my mind. I mean, if you are in the hunt, as the Cubs are, you don't just get rid of your best player. I understand, you know, there might be a time to cut bait and get prospects. I just don't think Chris Bryant's the guy that you want to let go of right now.
This is really interesting. I see both sides of this. I don't want to think of it as a sort of goodbye, though. I don't think that's why he's there. You know, can we get to this grievance already, please? Already? Anytime now. Just so we have a clear vision of what's up. The other problem is, from my standpoint as a Cubs fan, is I haven't heard anything except what the Cubs want back for Bryant is out of control. I need to see some names to see if, as a Cub fan, I'm like, okay, that works. That list, Cubs can bring that back for Chris Bryant. I'm okay with it.
It's going to be descriptors, names, though. It's going to be names you don't necessarily recognize unless you study Baseball America religiously.
I'm willing to look up and listen to the people that do study that stuff for a living. I'm willing to take their word for it.
Thank you for the question.
Have we underestimated the Blackhawks again? What is the biggest reason you do or do not believe in the Hawks' ability to make a playoff push?
You know, I watched the whole year. I think that's what the biggest problem is, the consistently inconsistentness. Is that a word? The inconsistency.
There you go.
The Blackhawks are really a frustrating team to watch. It's nice to see them have a push, but they have already done enough damage to themselves. I'm hard pressed to believe. I mean, I think that we'll see what happens out of the trade deadline. I'm very curious to see if they can move some money. I would advocate trying to sign an extension for Leonard, and if Corey Crawford wants to go somewhere else, I think you accommodate that. But I don't know. I just it's hard when you've been hurt before. It's hard to buy back in.
The NHL is the biggest reason why you want to believe if you're a Blackhawks fan, if you follow the league, because if you're 4 points out of the wild card spot and it's January 16th, which is where the Hawks are as they woke up this morning, you got a shot. You got a shot to get in. And so you think that if after winning 7 out of the last 10 games that you're filled with some optimism that is real. And what is the biggest reason for that? Because of your goaltenders. When you have Leonard, who is worth talking to about an extension because he's going to be very expensive in free agency. When you've got Corey Crawford, who last night went to 6-0-2 again Montreal, because that is a really good tandem. A week ago, you're talking about trading Corey Crawford, which makes a lot of sense. I wonder if you're making a push, if you keep them and see what you have going into, you know, the second half of the season, making a late run. This is being done without Saad and without Strom. And last night they're getting Zach Smith with some secondary scoring. You've got Taves playing like Taves again, 36 points in his last 37 games. Patrick Kane on the verge of 1,000 points. This is a fun team to watch right now.
There are signs of life, which is good if you are into that sort of thing. And there are young, promising players around some of the Wily veterans, you know, in DeBrinket and Kubalik, who's been scoring his head off lately. But Molly, you said it. I mean, they've been the same team all year where they give you a little bit of hope. They win a few games in a row, and you think maybe they're turning a corner, and then they roll off a losing streak. You know, they finished sixth last year, seventh the year before that. They just haven't been consistently good enough that they can make a playoff push this year as well.
7 out of 10 is a nice little run. The tandem of Leonard and Crawford is awesome, but yeah, they have just shown to be too inconsistent. I agree with that, so I'm going to say no on the playoff push.
I don't want them to sell. This is why you don't want them to sell. There's some good young talent on this team. And listen, if you can keep winning 7 out of every 10 the rest of the way, you're going to be playing in the postseason. So let's just keep this up. Let's just hit reset. Let's just hit reset on that 7 out of 10. Let's start another 7 out of 10 streak and go for it. Why not?
That's hockey, baby.
312-644-6767. That's the 5 at 5, baby. Mully and Haw on the score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.